This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Bull, and we are all tied at 20.
Mooney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Jeffrey! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
We welcome you to a brand new week of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. From 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, brought to you by our longtime title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by the Michiana Boat and Sports Show at the Century Center in South Bend, January 24th, 25th, and 26th. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, January the 20th of 2020, 13 days away from Super Bowl 54. The 49ers and the Chiefs will square off in Miami. We'll have that game for you right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And I'm sure we'll have a few hours of radio coverage from Westwood One leading up to the grandest game that football has to offer. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Coming up on the program, we will talk some NFL, and there's some local flavor to Super Bowl 54. A former Notre Dame All-American is going to be a defensive coordinator in the National Football League. The My Five question of the day today, in honor of the Chiefs going to their first Super Bowl since 1969, there was a very young Eric Hansen at that time, and he is going to reveal his five favorite things about the year 1969. It could be an event, a person who was born or did something great, a big song, a big movie, maybe something was invented. So we'll see what he has to offer. I'm going to assume there might be something food-related involved in the top five today.
Kind of.
Okay. All right. We'll find out. Coming up next hour, we're going to debut our ACC basketball power rankings. Where does Notre Dame stack up? We'll have rapid fire, more on the NFL. The Irish hockey struggles continued in Columbus over the weekend, so we'll get to all that more coming up over the next couple of hours here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. A reminder, the Irish basketball team idle until Wednesday when they host the Syracuse Orange in a rematch, one of the best games of the year a couple of weeks ago up at the Carrier Dome. A game the Irish won 88-87. So that game Wednesday night, 7 o'clock right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We're going to begin with some Notre Dame football talk, and it centers around four former players who will be participating in the Senior Bowl down in Alabama. The game is on Saturday. The workouts, which are televised by the NFL Network, begin tomorrow. And the four Irish players that will participate in the Senior Bowl week, one offensive player, wide receiver, Chase Claypool, and three from the defensive backfield, cornerback, Troy Pride Jr., and a pair of safeties, Jalen Elliott and Aloe Gilman. It's kind of interesting to think back 2 years ago. I don't think anyone probably was thinking about saying or writing that Jalen Elliott would be going to a Senior Bowl 2 years from there, but he absolutely turned his football career around. I'm sure a change in coaching staff on the defensive side helped him greatly, but here we are a couple of years removed from Jalen Elliott just being a guy on this football team you weren't sure how it was going to work out, to being a guy who had two great years to wrap up his Notre Dame tenure, Eric, and a big opportunity this week down in Alabama.
He does, and I remember when he came in, you know, there are certain recruits that you get a vibe about from talking to people, and I was absolutely on the Jalen Elliott bandwagon, and it crashed. And then he resurrected it and made me look better late in his career. Because he flat out struggled. I mean, his, you would see, first he had trouble getting on the field. Then the first year that he started, you would see him in pictures of touchdown passes for the other team out of position. And then he just went to work and became a really good player for 2 years. So you got to be proud of a kid that didn't give up on himself, and the coaching staff didn't get up. And he's got a pro future.
Claypool, we know, a guy that's going to be a second day draft pick, second or third round, you would assume. This is a heavy, deep wide receiver.
Historically deep. Yes.
So this is like the 83 quarterback class, except wide receiver.
Yes.
Okay.
This is as deep and as talented wide receiver class as Scott Wright can remember, who was the analyst that I used to do the story.
Okay. And this, of course, their Senior Bowl coverage in the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, on these four players going to the Senior Bowl. And Claypool is a guy that has maybe a little different skill set. Some of the speedsters, they're going to be in this wide receiver class. So depending on what you're looking for, you're going to have some options. So Claypool is going to be a second-round guy. Now, there's other guys who could be taken in the second round. Let's push them aside because they're not involved in the Senior Bowl because they're juniors. So, or in terms of eligibility for the Senior Bowl, they can't participate. And that's Komet, Okwara.
Well, Okwara's hurt.
Right.
Yeah. And Komet is a junior.
Right. That's what I was getting to.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you've got Pride, Elliott, and Gilman. These are the three that I would assume have the most to gain going to the Senior Bowl. And I don't know if I should put Gilman in there because I think he's pretty much solidified who he is. I don't know if anything's going to change who Gilman is, but Pride and Elliott, it feels like they have really good weeks that could really change the way that people look at them and possibly improve their stature.
Well, you know, what Scott Wright had told me was he said Claypool and Pride, and certainly the safeties too, but when you put the context that there's going to be this great wide receiver class now, 9 out of the top rated 11 receivers are underclassmen, so Chase is going to be there with another senior, and so he's not going to be competing, but he can certainly solidify maybe a second round draft choice ranking just by standing out and showing people how good he is. The other thing that's going to be interesting with Chase is when he gets to the combine, how fast he runs. You know, Miles Boykin was a surprise at how fast he ran from our standpoint. I don't know. I think the team knew how fast he was, but Chase is going to be interesting. But his special team skill set, they're going to test that at the Senior Bowl as well, and he's going to be very good at that. So he can help himself. And then Troy Pride having to go against the elite receivers could help himself. You know, right now the three defensive backs are all in the kind of round 3 to round 5 range. Alohi can help himself with showing good coverage skills because everybody knows he can get down in the box and he can tackle people. What's he going to be like at that level, at the NFL level, in coverage, especially if he gets singled out? I think Jalen Elliott, for a strong safety, really was a good coverage guy. When you talk about a safety that can give you nickel skills or nickel coverage skills in a pinch, I'm really interested to see how teams kind of view him. And again, it's going to be interesting to see how he runs. I would say with him, I think they want to see his all-round skill set at the Senior Bowl because he's so improved on coverage. You know, is he a guy that's going to be good in the box and being able to be a box safety and stop the run? And can he be a little bit more than all those things? So I think this is a great opportunity for those guys. Oh, Khalid Kareem is also, he withdrew because of an injury.
So Troy Pride Jr. to me is the one I have the big question about among these four. I am not totally sure of his upside in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. I use as a framework, a foundation for this conversation, his old teammate Julian Love, who I think has better coverage skills than Troy Pride Jr.
A lot better.
Okay. He was a fourth round pick of the New York Giants last year.
Okay.
So I look at Pride. He's got the speed. I think there are going to be concerns about his coverage ability in man-to-man. Now, that's something you can technique-wise get better. But I just feel like, Eric, I don't know if he's going to be as high as that analysis you were just talking about, because I use, again, Julian Love is farther along to me in his football being than Troy Pride Jr. at the same time, and I was surprised Julian was only a fourth-round pick last year. So I think there's going to be a great opportunity for Troy to show there's more than just speed to his game. I'm not saying he's a bad cover guy. I just don't think he is at the level of Julian Love at the same time in their careers.
He's not where he has Julian beat, and by kind of a wide margin, is 40 time. He'll blaze that, and that will get people excited about him. They're also going to say, I wonder if he was kind of miscast as a boundary corner, which his strength would have been playing field corner this year, but they needed him to play into the boundary because that's the personnel that they had left from their cornerback recruiting. If Julian Love had been back and Julian had been able to be the boundary corner, if he had come back and Troy had been the field corner, that they could have been – they were fifth best pass defense in the country. They could have been maybe number two.
Okay, so for the average football fan, why would Pride had been a better fit for the field side, which is the wide side of the
field? Right. Your speed shows up more on that side because you have to cover so much more field. The field corner is the guy that's on the wide side of the field. You know, the ball is placed between hash marks, and in college, they're a lot wider than they are in the pros. When you get to the pros, the field corner and the boundary corner, there's not as much difference. Same with wide receiver positions. Right. There's not as much difference because of the hash marks. So a guy that's super fast like Troy Pride is going to shine at the field corner, or boundary corner, or field corner.
Right.
The boundary, think of it this way. You're going against a big physical receiver into the boundary usually, like Chase Claypool.
Mm-hmm.
Look how Notre Dame is constructed. You're guarding Chase Claypool in the boundary. You're guarding Braden Lindsey in the field. Troy Pride is a guy that can run with Braden Lindsey. A lot of corners can't. Troy can. Can he muscle up with Chase Claypool? That became a mismatch this year. Chase Claypool just dominated him in practices. So he's, you know, you get into the NFL and it's really not as much different. So I think his speed is going to help him. It's going to show up more.
So that's going to be what people are going to draft him on, is that speed.
Right.
And
hoping they can change him, hoping they can get some bad habits. Because he's really not bigger than Julian Love. They're about the same size, but he's probably going to run under 4.4. And Julian, I think, ran around a 4.5. I have it somewhere, but he ran about what was expected. But I love Julian's skill set. I would take, if I were a team, I would take Julian over Troy Pride Jr., even though Troy has that elite speed. But again, when you're that fast, there's always a chance that, and have a great attitude like Troy does, there's always a chance things are going to kick in for you.
Julian Love's 40-yard dash, 4.54.
Okay.
And he was the 12th cornerback taken in the draft last year.
Right. So Troy's 40 speed will be much faster than that, but he may go later in the draft.
Love, I think, better instincts.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, okay. He's the all-time leader at Notre Dame in pass breakups.
Mm-hmm. So let me go through a select group of questions involving the Senior Bowl. Who do you think has the most to gain? Claypool, Pride, Elliott, Gilman.
I would say Elliott. I think that Claypool is already in that second to third round range, and I don't think he's getting into the first round. There's just too many good people that are ridiculous. I mean, it's just people like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Judy and those guys. It's tough to get in the first round. But Elliott, I think, could move up. You know, Scott Wright was telling me there's a bunch of guys kind of bunched in that maybe 6 to 11 range of safeties. And if you could go from number 11 to number 6, that could be a couple rounds difference. I think he's the guy that could surprise people. I'm not predicting that he will, but I'm saying he could.
Is there a player that you feel like that could have the most to lose with a bad week?
I would say Pride. If he gets, you know, if his speed doesn't show up in this game, then people will discount it more when he runs it in the combine and runs well.
Okay, since we're just talking about Claypool, Pride, Elliott, and Gilman right now, since they're in the Senior Bowl, do you expect all four to be drafted?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So now let's talk about some guys that are not at the Senior Bowl for various reasons, not eligible, injuries, etc. So you look at Kmet, Kareem, Akor. I would say that's the big three. There are others, right. Tony Jones Jr., but I don't believe he's going to be drafted,
right.
So
right.
Let's push him to another day. Do you get a feel for Cole Kmet being the best tight end in the 2020 NFL draft?
That's where Scott Wright has him ranked. That's where Dane Brugler of The Athletic has him ranked. Not everybody universally has him ranked there, but he's moving up. I think as they watch more film on him and he goes to the combine, I don't think he's going to be guy at the combine, but I think he's going to be better than average at everything, and that's going to be enough to push him to the top of that list. You know, his medicals are going to be important to him because he's had some injury history, and if that checks out, I think he's the number one tight end coming off the board.
Then you have Kareem and Akora, both defensive ends, but different types of defensive ends. Akora is that guy that is supposed to get after the quarterback. Kareem is more of that balanced defensive end that brings you great run support, setting the edge, but also with some ability to get to the quarterback. Now, I know Okora's been a buzz guy now for over a year. There was a thought he could be a first-round pick. I don't think that's going to happen now, in my personal opinion. I think second round might be the best that he can do because of a very odd last year at Notre Dame. I think the previous year, Eric, the expectations through the roof because he started to figure it out. This year was a very uneven year. I think at one point, and I'm going to paraphrase a bit, I got the sense from Brian Kelly when he was asked about Akor earlier in the year that he was almost caught up too much in getting after the quarterback and getting sacks rather than just taking care of assignments. And I think the raw ability and the athleticism will draw attention, but I just wonder how much this last season will cause a few teams to take a little step back and say, wait a minute, let's check this out.
Well, first, if he's healthy, now he fractured a fibula at the beginning of November.
Right.
So the last time I saw him, he was on crutches, but that was the middle of December. I'm hoping to catch up actually with him this week to see where he is, to see if he's going to be able to do the stuff at the combine, which is the end of February into March. It's like February 23rd to March 2nd. And if he is able to do that, he's a guy that's expected to test well, and that's going to get everybody excited again. He's got a real wide range in mock draft projections. I just saw Pro Football Focus still has him in their first round, and that came out today. Scott Wright has him in the third round. The one thing that kind of helps him is that a lot of teams are looking at him as a 34 outside linebacker. And if you think about what that position does in some schemes, it's somebody that can rush the passer. It's also somebody that can cover. And he did that.
Von Miller for Denver has done that.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, it's not just a guy that kind of, covers and isn't really good at it. Akora has an interception, and there were times you could see him dropping in some games where we were expecting him to rush the passer, and probably the offense was too, where he was kind of a pain for the opposing quarterback because he was really good in coverage. So his schematic flexibility, I think, will help make him a difficult decision for teams. He's certainly not an elite guy when you think of a big defensive end going in the first round. again, I think that 34 outside linebacker may be his ticket. Kareem helped himself by coming back this year. He was a guy that would have been late rounds.
I like him.
And he's moved up to where maybe he can go in the third round and maybe even a little bit higher. He's so disruptive, gets his hands on a lot of balls, both in the air and stripping running backs. He's very, very active. You know, his medicals would be interesting too, but boy, he played through a lot. And I chatted with his dad. That's how I found out he had withdrawn from the Senior Bowl. His agent and his family just felt like, hey, heal your body, get ready for the combine. The Senior Bowl would have been great, but he can show more at the combine, and I think that's going to be his ticket.
A couple of years ago, I made the prediction that Durham Smythe would be drafted before Josh Adams, and that played out. There was a part of me for a time that felt like there is a chance Kareem might go before a core. I think Kareem has a bigger ceiling in terms of people falling in love with him. I think there's some untapped love out there in the National Football League. But I think the point that you made a moment ago was right on the button. With that 3-4 scheme, Okor really fits into that type of philosophy. And I think that might push him maybe back not up. Back to the first round, but a very, very solid second round pick. I think third round might be a stretch. He just seems like the perfect second-round pick, and I think there's a chance Kareem can get up there as well. But, again, a different type of defensive end.
Absolutely. And Scott Wright has Kmet going in the first round of the Patriots.
I would not be shocked.
Yeah. I think that's pretty interesting. And then, really, you know, the Tony Jones is the Chris Finks of the world. You know, they're guys that are going to have to go through as undrafted free agents. The guy that – In that boat that Scott is really intrigued by is Jameer Jones. Just how productive he was after Dalen Hayes and especially when Okora got hurt. I mean, he ended up one sack away from leading the team, and he had more tackles than Okora and fewer snaps this year. So he was a very productive player. He's a guy that he could see a team inviting into camp, liking him, and keeping him on the practice squad and developing him and see what they can get out of him.
Very interesting. All right, we'll put that in our back pocket. Yeah. It is 28 minutes after the top of the hour. Eric and Darren with you. Read more about Notre Dame's players in the Senior Bowl, South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. Coming up next, we'll talk about a couple of defensive coordinators, one with Notre Dame ties that apparently is going to get his shot in the NFL, and another defensive coordinator could be hired at a high-profile opponent of the Fighting Irish in 2020. Plus, there's a little local flavor in Super Bowl 54. That's coming up in just a moment as Sports Beat continues from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. SportsBeat at 535 from 96.1 WSBT and on the SportsBeat app, which you can pick up right now for free at the iTunes or Google Play stores. And listen to SportsBeat anytime you would like. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. A couple of pieces of football news centered around defensive coordinators. We'll start in college football. Earlier today, ESPN.com college football writer Adam Rittenberg reported sources told him that USC is trying to close out a deal with Todd Orlando to become the Trojans' new defensive coordinator. Now, Orlando was just recently let go by the Texas Longhorns as their defensive coordinator. He actually did a pretty good job on arrival in Austin and turning around that defense. He improved Texas from 87th to 39th in total defense. Their scoring defense went from 80 to 24. Now the Longhorns have taken a step back, and Texas and Coach Herman decided to go a different direction, opening up the possibility of Orlando going somewhere else, and that possibility might be ending up at USC. I thought Orlando was involved in another job. In fact, he has joined Texas Tech staff as assistant head coach and linebacker coach, but the door is open for the possibility that he could end up at USC as their defensive coordinator. So an interesting little side note. I would have to think, Eric, it can't be easy adding on to the USC staff right now with Clay Helton avoiding getting fired last year. And I think the number one reason why he did not get fired was a new AD was brought in. And the last thing a new AD wants to do is fire someone during his honeymoon as the athletic director. You let them go out there for a year, show what they can do. You get to know them. You evaluate them. And then after a year, if you want to go a different direction, you can go a different direction. So Helton was given the benefit of the doubt by the new AD. But I would have to think it can't be easy to add to that staff right now, knowing the uncertainty of the head coach beyond the 2020 campaign.
Well, I mean, if you're Todd Orlando and it's Texas Tech or USC, I think you you bet on yourself and say, I can improve this USC defense. And even if Todd Helton ends up getting fired, you've kind of repositioned yourself in the marketplace to land something good. There was a time, especially when Todd was at Houston with Coach Herman, where he was regarded as kind of a top 10 type defensive coordinator in the country. He was a real rising star. He had just come from Utah State, and you know, it's funny how your fortunes can change. Now, again, it's an evolving game offensively, and if you don't keep up, you can fall off just like John Tenuta did. I remember when John Tenuta was near the top of that list, and in very short order, he sunk and has never really kind of figured out how to play in space, you know, against space and tempo. And Brian Van Gorder was the same way. So, but I think Todd Orlando, I think it would be an interesting hire. I follow a lot of USC accounts, and they would rather walk on glass than see Todd Orlando as a defensive coordinator.
It all has to do with the head coach, though.
It does. I mean, nothing he is doing is going to satisfy them.
Because the recruiting was atrocious in this last cycle. I remember one Twitter feed, someone that follows all that stuff so closely, had Bowling Green's recruiting class ahead of USC's at one point.
Yeah.
Goodness, how does that possibly happen? Another defensive coordinator position that it looks like is going to be filled, and it involves a former Notre Dame player, Anthony Weaver. He earned All-American status as a defensive end at Notre Dame during his final season of 2001, in which he had 59 tackles, 21 tackles for loss, and 7 sacks. It appears he's going to be promoted by Bill O'Brien from Houston Texans defensive line coach to defensive coordinator. Romeo Crennel reportedly will not be brought back. The 72-year-old defensive specialist, he might be reassigned within the Texans organization. But Weaver played 7 years in the NFL with the Baltimore Ravens and the Houston Texans from 2002 to 2008. He has spent time as a coach with the Florida Gators, the New York Jets, the Buffalo Bills, and he was the Houston Texans defensive line coach last season. Probably a guy that gets lost in the shuffle in an era of football that wasn't the greatest at Notre Dame, but he was one heck of a football player, and that senior season was highly productive, leading to getting drafted by the Baltimore Ravens. So an opportunity for a former Notre Dame player to become a defensive coordinator with the Houston Texans. Great opportunity for Weaver, and he's being shown, I guess, a lot of confidence by Bill O'Brien to elevate him to defensive line coach with no coordinator position experience anywhere.
Yeah, he's very well thought of in the coaching world, and I remember him as a player. He started as a freshman, which was very unusual. He might have been the first one to start at defensive end, and he's a really good player, really good guy. This is very well deserved. I'm very happy for Anthony.
Okay, apparently it hasn't been finalized yet or announced by the Texans.
Okay,
but
then I'm anticipating being happy.
We are anticipating being happy. Just like a moment ago, you're anticipating the Baseball Hall of Fame announcement tomorrow because you were talking about Todd Helton a second ago. So I got excited.
I called him Todd.
You did. That's okay.
I combined Todd and Clay into the same person. Clay Helton and Todd Orlando. I guess I married them.
That's okay. That's a good thing. Hey, okay. Todd Helton played football at Tennessee.
Okay.
It all works out perfectly. Okay. You want Larry Walker to get into the Hall of Fame. I know. Tomorrow at 6 o'clock, we'll find out.
I want Larry Walker over Jimmy Walker.
Yes, absolutely. I'm with you on that. Dynamite. All right, NFL yesterday. How about Mike McGlinchey in his second year in the National Football League? He is going to be the starting right tackle for the NFC champion San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 54. It's the 49ers taking on the Kansas City Chiefs in that matchup down in Miami. Former Notre Dame defensive lineman Sheldon Day, also a member of that 49er NFC championship team. And McGlinchey had one of those great sound bites leading up to the NFC championship. Did you catch it?
I did not.
It was one of those classic Mike rants. And you know, we love Mike as a media member. He was so honest. He was so much fun to cover. You could ask him about anything, and he would supply an answer for you. And I don't recall the exact question, but it centered around Garoppolo, his quarterback with San Francisco. And he went off on, hey, we believe in this guy. And he started talking about Aaron Rodgers, and it got to that point where he felt like he was saying Garoppolo was better, and then he kind of backed off. But it was just a great McGlinchey quote. So Mike's got a chance to start in Super Bowl 54, and Day's really hung around the National Football League very quietly, continues to get opportunities. He'll be a part of that 49er defense that absolutely stymied the Green Bay Packers until late in the game. I mean, it was 27-0 at halftime, and it felt like Green Bay had no hope whatsoever to come back in that football game. And a lot of it had to do with that 49er defense that really shut down the Packer running game. At the end of the game, Rodgers' completion percentage was good, but he also had three turnovers in the game, a couple of picks, and a forced fumble. But my goodness, the story of the day, McGlinchey and that 49er offensive line running over the Green Bay defense. They threw the ball 8 times. 8 in a conference championship game, and the Packers knew they were going to run it, and there was no shot whatsoever. And, of course, a guy at Purdue that had a total of 136 carries in 4 years, he looked like he started as a wide receiver at Purdue, ended up as a running back with 93 carries his last year. Raheem Mostert ran for 220 yards, 29 carries, 4 touchdowns, the second greatest rushing day in NFL history. Cut 7 times. Did you know the Chicago Bears had this guy for a short time until he was cut in 2016? He got some carries. He was on the practice squad. They didn't hang on to him. The Niners ran for 285 yards. They threw 8 times. The rest of the NFC North has to be smacking themselves in the face saying, why could we not do that against the Green Bay Packers? How come we didn't run it down their throat? Because, boy, the weakness of Green Bay showed up in that game. And, hey, it was no fluke. The 49ers whooped them out in San Francisco during the regular season, and they validated that whooping by doing it again yesterday. But how about the running game? The NFL, that's like college, like a mismatch. Superpower against mini, you run it 50 times, you throw it 8 because they can't stop you. That shouldn't happen in the NFL. 8 throws in a title game?
And Tevin Coleman got hurt.
And he got hurt. That's an excellent point as well. So how about Mostert? That's a great opportunity for him. And from the AFC, the Chiefs advanced to the Super Bowl with a 35-24 win over Tennessee. Second straight game they were down by double digits at home. Came back to beat Tennessee. South Bend's Garrett Dieter moves on to the Super Bowl. He's been a part of their practice squad, a couple of tackles this year on special teams for the old wide receiver. And he's got an opportunity to, you never know, Eric, with an injury, could get on the roster. Remember last year in the AFC title game when that, did New England muff the punt or not review? Dieter's the one that picked up the football. Yeah. It almost became a huge hero in Kansas City history. That would have been an unforgettable moment. But replay turned things around. I think it was Edelman. They said he did not touch it. It was close. But he's got a chance to be a part of the greatest spectacle that football has to offer. And with South Bend ties, congratulations to him. Gehrig has a chance to be a part of what is truly one of the great spectacles in any sport. The days, hours, and 2 weeks, I guess, leading up to Super Bowl 54. Not bad from his days at South Bend Adams and South Bend Washington.
And Bowling Green and SMU and then Alabama.
That's right.
So that's pretty neat.
It is very cool. Derrick Henry couldn't get it done against the Chiefs run game, although early on it looked like he could. 19 carries, 69 yards. But Patrick Mahomes, second straight game, he's gone 23 for 35 throwing and 53 rushing yards. Same exact totals from the Texans game and this matchup with the Titans. Three more touchdown strikes for Mahomes, who is going to be the steal of the century as the Chiefs moved up a couple of years ago to take him at number 10 overall. And of course, we hear it every broadcast. The Bears moved up to number 2 to take Mitchell Trubisky. And then Deshaun Watson went to the Houston Texans. That story probably will be brought up again leading up to Super Bowl 54 and during the 14 hours of pregame coverage. So, with the Chiefs in the Super Bowl for the first time since 1969, we go back to 1969 for the My Five question of the day. What are the five favorite things that Eric Hansen has found about the year 1969. We will find out his answers coming up in just a moment as Sports Beat continues from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and on the Sports Beat app.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
The last time the Kansas City Chiefs made the Super Bowl, 1969. So, what were a very young Eric Hansen's five favorite things about events, people, a song, a movie, something that was invented, whatever the case may be, from the year 1969? Let's begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
Well, there was a toy that I really wanted, I guess it's a toy, for Christmas, and I didn't get it because my mom was worried about the artificial colors and artificial flavors. It was the Snowman Snow Cone Machine.
Ooh.
And I was extra good that year, and it still didn't happen. And I had told that story over the years because I'm a big baby. On my 50th birthday, in the mail, I got a SpongeBob Snow Cone Machine. I don't know who from to this day got it for me, and I love it. I spent probably an hour making snow cones the day that it came in the mail. It was awesome.
It wasn't your mom?
It wasn't my mom.
Interesting. Wow, yeah. A little extra drama there.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Four!
I'm going with history here, and I'm going with the Apollo 11 module, lunar module, Eagle landing on the moon. That's something that doesn't happen today, you know, and that was just so mind-bending as a little kid to think that we could land on the moon.
I'm trying to figure out how we went from not getting a snow cone machine as number five to Apollo 11 as number four.
Well, I'll tell you what, I thought there would be much better possibility to get that snow cone machine than landing on the moon, let me tell you.
All right, Chiefs in the Super Bowl for the first time since 69. Eric's favorite things about that year.
Oh, okay. Number three.
I had some really eclectic television tastes. I liked the show Dark Shadows that was on. I liked the Wacky Races. That was my favorite cartoon. But on September 26, 1969, the Brady Bunch debuted.
Ooh.
And I loved the Brady Bunch. I wanted to trade my two sisters for the six Brady kids and be one of them. And I love my sisters now. I wouldn't trade them for the Brady kids, but at that point, I definitely would have.
This is going just as I planned this morning when I thought of this question. All right, here we go.
Number two.
Wait a minute. So doesn't Dr. Evil or go back into the time machine to the 1960s?
He does.
So this is perfect.
Number two.
Okay. Well, number two, a young Eric Hansen
a mini Eric Hansen. Got to see his first college football game. Some friends of the family had an extra ticket to go see Ohio State, Michigan at Ohio Stadium. The number two Buckeyes beat the number four Wolverines 50-14. And this was in 1968. So on January 1st, 1969, Ohio State won the national championship, beating number two USC 27-16. And it was the first AP poll where they did the voting after the bowl game. So Ohio State ended up being the number one team in the country.
Wow. A little fun fact. It was amongst a fun that fact. Answer. Very nice.
www.dutch.com.org.
Number one.
Well, number one, there was a lot of great music. I went back and looked at the top 100 for the year, and my favorite song from that year wasn't in the top 100. It debuted late in the year. It got to number one in February of 1970, and it was Venus by the Shocking Blues. I bought this 45 with my own money, and I don't have it anymore because I gave away all my 45s, but it's the first record I ever bought, and I still love it.
So my follow-up question should be, Shocking Blue or Bananarama's version of Venus?
Shocking Blue. And it was funny, they're a Dutch band, and when they get to the chorus, they say, "She's got it, yeah, baby, I'm your Venus, I'm your fire, your desire." But they were Dutch, so they'd say, "Your desire." Listen when they say it. Here it comes.
Oh, yeah.
And so we thought they were saying Jordan Sire, so we were singing the wrong lyrics for years.
Well, I think Bananarama wins the name of the group title portion of the conversation over Shocking Blue. I thought Bananarama had the original version until just moments ago when you said, hey, Shocking Blue.
Absolutely.
I did not know that.
My first 45.
I still couldn't tell you half the lyrics to Pour Some Sugar on Me. When I looked them up one time, I'm like, I've been singing this wrong for years. Half of the words don't match up. All right. Shocking Blue by Venus, the ultimate event from 1969. More Sports Beat next on WSBT and the Sports Beat app.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win! Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cub Midwest League Championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Sports Beat tonight, presented by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Also by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. And the Michiana Boat and Sports Show, coming to the Century Center in South Bend. He's Sean, I'm Darren. 7 minutes after the top of the hour, you're home for Super Bowl 54 in 13 days. A 6:30 kickoff on February 2nd, the AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs taking on the NFC champ, the San Francisco 49ers. And San Francisco has a chance to make, I guess, a little history to become the second team to win six Super Bowls.
That is very true.
Joining the Pittsburgh Steelers. 49ers fans, very spoiled. They won their first five, if I'm not mistaken, and lost to the Ravens a few years ago in the game in New Orleans in which the power went out.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
And, gee, who was their quarterback back then with the 49ers? Guy that can't find a job nowadays.
Not playing anymore. That's
not
right.
Something.
Super Bowl quarterback.
All right. Well, and you've got Kansas City there for the first time in 50 years. I saw this picture a couple of weeks ago. It was brought back up after the Chiefs won the AFC. But the last time the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, there's a picture of quarterback Len Dawson in the locker room. Have you seen this?
The old cigarette in the Fresca.
He's got a beautiful cigarette thing in his hand and a Fresca bottle sitting between his feet.
I think Pat Mahomes, doesn't he have a T-shirt with that picture on it or so? I think I remember I think I remember something like that from last year. It's just a classic, and living in that area, and going to the University of Kansas, which is like 45 minutes from Kansas City, used to get to hear old Len Dawson doing. He's still doing the radio broadcasts and all that kind of good stuff. Good friend of mine is both a 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs fan. He was born in Northern California, lived there for just a few years, and then was raised in Arkansas, which is, you know, just south of Missouri and Kansas and all that. So he is living the high life right now, the best ever. Have you ever been a two-team, one-sport kind of person?
A big drop-off between number one.
Between kind of who
and
you,
number
yeah.
Two. Well, I no, you know what? I'll say professionally I have one team, and then there's some other teams that, yeah, I kind of like because if a person is on that team.
Right.
Like, for example.
That's kind of how I am, I think.
You know, I always loved Mike McGlinchey because he was so much fun to cover, and we had so much fun asking him questions. I followed him with the 49ers, so I'm happy for him. But I would say the only time really there's a mutual love would be in college basketball, growing up in Illinois, being an Illinois fan. I still am today, but I'm a Notre Dame basketball fan now as well since coming here. So I root for both of those teams. So when they played in the NCAA tournament many moons ago, that was very, very strange, to say the least.
Definitely.
So that's the only time, though, really, I have two teams that are fairly even.
Yeah, I usually have, I always have the one at the top, but then most of the rest are sort of pecking order, like who do I dislike the least and that kind of stuff. And that's what watching the NFC Championship game was like yesterday, the 49ers and the Packers. I've always leaned a little bit more toward the Packers, never the 49ers, but
after visiting Green Bay 5 years ago on a South Bend Cubs trip to Appleton and getting into Lambeau Field, I would say this. If I did not grow up a diehard Denver Bronco fan, I could see myself rooting for the Packers because that little town, having that team, all these little shops with Packer stuff in it, it is a cool little town. And growing up in a little bitty farm town of 2,400, I kind of like that small town feel that Green Bay had.
Yeah.
If it wasn't being such a diehard Bronco fan, I could see rooting for Green Bay. It's
college
a very
atmosphere.
Lovable place. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just different than most places.
I liked him better when Favre was around than Rodgers.
Yeah. It's funny. It kind of burned my tail for so many years as an Elway guy to hear, oh, he wins the AFC Championship, but he can't win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know it takes a great team to win a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
And those teams did not have many Hall of Famers on it, if any, that he got to the Super Bowl. And
I
a
agree.
Great accomplishment. Then why the heck does Aaron Rodgers get off the hook for being 1-3 in NFC Championship games and hasn't been to a Super Bowl since he won it many moons ago?
He gets a complete free pass. And everyone wanted to blame Mike McCarthy, especially after they had the turnaround that they had this year, and I still think that I think they overachieved an extent.
They did.
When you look at the schedule that they played, they were second to last. They had a losing record last year. I think they overachieved. They had a nice turnaround season, but that's kind of what the NFL has become. There were, I think it was like five teams that were right at 500 or below 500 that ended up making the playoffs this year. The Packers and 49ers were both there, but the 49ers have restocked with a pretty nice few drafts the last few years.
I will say this. I don't agree with what I said. That's other people's opinions. I think Rodgers is still one heck of a player, and it wasn't his fault couldn't stop the run.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was embarrassing.
Yep. You know, and I think that's kind of also what when you look at the way the NFL, what linebackers are right now, and you look at the success that the Titans had with their running game. I was surprised, one, that the Chiefs were able to slow it down to the extent that they did, but I just think that linebackers are becoming more, you know, you've got less the Mike Singletary type, and they look more like Jalen Smith right now. They're out there for pass coverage more than they are, it seems like, run-stopping ability. So if you can run the ball a little bit, you can have some success.
And that's probably why Clemson's Isaiah Simmons will be highly sought after, a guy that can play in the slot, can play linebacker, can play safety, can get after the quarterback, does a little bit of everything for that Clemson team, but he has jumped into the NFL draft, so we don't have to worry about him November 7th of 2020.
Very true.
At Notre Dame Stadium. And I will say this, again, as a diehard Bronco fan, I have laughed my tail off for years, the Chiefs choking in the playoffs, and it looked like it might happen again.
Yeah.
I got my hopes up, but it was a great win for Kansas City. They're one heck of a football team, and I guess I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I thought about it yesterday. I'm like, you know what? My team's been to 8 Super Bowls since they've been to 1. So enough of the negativity. Congratulations to them. Mahomes is one heck of a player, and I don't know how we're going to beat them anytime soon. So this could be the new Patriots.
They very well could be with this young quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, that they've got. And I've got a rapid-fire question that kind of figures him into it, so I'll save my Patrick Mahomes talk for that. But man,
okay,
you talk about a young quarterback who's doing some things right now. They're built for it. They still have to, I think, probably get a little bit better defensively in the long haul, but they're pretty set right now.
And you mentioned that Mahomes has the Dawson T-shirt of that Fresca and cigarette. George Kittle won the day yesterday by wearing the T-shirt in the press conference of his quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, shirtless with, like, jockey shorts on.
Uh-huh.
And it's autographed to George from Garoppolo. The heartthrob, Mr. Garoppolo, out in San Francisco. And this could be a rare pick-em in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This is going to be tight odds. I heard Kansas City open as a slight favorite. I have not looked so far today. I think this could be a pretty level betting.
One and a half
Sunday.
1.5 is what I saw today. Kansas, and I heard it was actually even at one point, and now it's 1.5 in Kansas City's favor. So
I think just the explosiveness of that Chiefs offense makes the difference. But that 49er running game, if it gets going, shortens the game, something Tennessee started to do but couldn't finish it off.
Yep.
All right, let's get to a little college basketball talk. We're going to start doing this with the ACC and the Big Ten. ACC basketball power rankings, which I think is absolutely impossible at this time. You could say the Big Three and everybody else. And I'm not going to try to persuade you in your rankings, but I would assume in some order Duke, Florida State, and Louisville will be the top three. And then from there, I think you can make strong arguments for a handful of teams to be number four. So this is just a fun little exercise, more than anything, to show the balance in this conference right now. Plus, I'm just curious to see where you would rank Mike Bray's Fighting Irish as they get set to take on Syracuse at home on Wednesday. So we'll just kind of roll through these, and if you have a team you want to talk about, we'll stop and we'll chat.
Okay.
Fair enough?
All right.
So who's the worst? Now, the ACC Network had Notre Dame recently last.
Which surprises me.
Which is not surprising considering who they are.
Yeah.
Tobacco Road.
I've got Notre Dame up a little bit. I've got Wake Forest at the very bottom. They don't have the worst record in the ACC, but I'm not going to put them above anybody.
I'm surprised Danny Manning has not brought in better players there.
Yeah. And he's had, what is this, year four, year five for him now at this point? He's already been there for, and he got a contract renewal, if I remember right. But I don't know.
He's 53 years old now. How is that possible, first off? But let's see here. I'm going to look it up real quick. Danny Manning has been at Wake Forest from 2014 on.
Man, so he's already been there for 6 years. This is seventh year already. But
and now, let's see. I'm looking at for his coaching record, and here it is. He is 65-93 at Wake Forest, 11-20 each of the last 2 years, 4-14 each of the last 2 years.
He's landed some guys here and there over the last few years, but they obviously have just never been able to put any of it together. I've just always, you know, obviously, Danny Manning, biggest moment basketball-wise of my young adult life when they won the national championship in 88, but I've just never thought of Danny Manning as a basketball technician by any means. He was on Bill Self's staff for a few years.
4 years ago, made the first four out in Dayton in the NCAA tournament, but then 11-20 the last 2 years. All right, so Wake Forest brings up the rear in your power rankings for the ACC, 14.
I've got North Carolina here with just the one win, and that came over Notre Dame at the start of the season, but no Cole Anthony since early December. And I mean, they are spinning right now. I think maybe if you add Cole Anthony to that team, they're a little bit better, but they're just not in good shape right now.
Remember the conversation we had the day after the Notre Dame North Carolina game? We said, North Carolina is not even close to the same team. That front line is not nearly as talented in past years, and they got ran off the court by Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they've lost to Pittsburgh twice already, and they lost to Georgia Tech by 13 as well.
Clemson beat them for the first time in how many years? Since the 20s?
Crazy. Exactly.
Crazy. Well, good. I'm glad you're bold enough, because I'm sure the ACC Network will have Carolina fifth or something, that they're going to magically turn things around.
I know.
All right?
I mean, if you're Cole Anthony, would you be thinking about even returning? He had meniscus surgery. I mean, you might as well just ride it out. This team's not going to the tournament at this point, barring a miraculous turnaround.
If you're not coming back, that's probably the logical thought, unless you just want to play down the stretch and try to get your team to a magical couple of weeks of basketball, the NCAA tournament. That, right now, they're a less than 2% shot, according to playoffstatus.com, of making the NCAA tournament.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so who's just above Carolina at 13?
I've got Miami at 13. They did take Florida State to overtime over the weekend, rivalry game. They only lost by 4. But they've got depth issues like Notre Dame. They're essentially playing 7 guys right now. They had 3 players play 40 out of 45 minutes in that overtime game. So the Hurricanes and Jim Larrañaga's guys kind of on fumes.
Unless things continue in a positive direction, Miami beating Illinois could be a dagger to Illinois' tournament chances. That was at home, and that was a bad, bad loss for Illinois. Okay, 12 in the ACC.
So then I've got Georgia Tech. As I mentioned, they did beat North Carolina, for whatever that's worth right now. But they've got the second-worst turnover ratio and the worst assist-to-turnover ratio in the ACC right now. They do. Year 4 for Josh Pastner.
ACC power rankings, number 11.
This is where I've got Notre Dame, a notch ahead of Georgia Tech, who they obviously just beat last week. And the Irish are at the other end of that turnover spectrum when you look at those bad numbers for Georgia Tech. Yep. I mean, they've just got to start winning some close games. They've been in all these close games. They start winning a few, get a little confidence. Maybe we could see them make a move to the middle of the pack in the ACC.
If they beat NC State, they might be 2-3 notches higher.
Yeah, and I mean, five of their next 6 games are completely winnable for Notre Dame. You've got Florida State coming up this weekend. They're going to be at the top of these power rankings. And even Florida State, I'm not going to write it off by any means, but I would say, realistically, just looking at the schedule, 5 of the next 6 completely winnable games.
Okay, number 10 in your power rankings in the ACC.
So I've got Boston College 1 ahead of Notre Dame, and obviously they've got the head-to-head. But BC was feeling pretty good. They beat Virginia a couple weeks ago, but then they lost 3 straight to Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and then Wake Forest. So, you know, just what you mentioned when we started this off, Darren, it's really just when you look at who's beaten who, everybody's kind of beating everybody, and you've got a lot of teams that are right around 500 in conference play and right below 500.
Number 9 in the ACC.
Pittsburgh, and they've only won 2 of their last 4, but both of those are against North Carolina, a 5-point loss to Louisville. They beat Rutgers as well, and Rutgers is ranked for the first time in, what, like 40 years or something like that?
They're really good, especially at the rack.
Yeah.
That's not a bad team whatsoever.
Yep.
Jeff Capel, I wonder what he's going to be able to do at Pittsburgh, the old Duke Blue Devil.
Yeah.
Kind of curious to see if he can make them an NCAA team 2 out of 3 years. Is that possible again at Pittsburgh? That for a while, they were that Sweet 16 darling for so many years. But now things have really changed in the opposite direction.
And, you know, Florida State's only loss in conference play right now is to Pittsburgh. That was the season opener. So all those games to open the season, you have seen some outliers in terms of how teams have played the rest of the year.
Jamie Dixon was the Pitt coach who had them rolling for quite some time. And they played one of my favorite NCAA tournament games against Bradley, because on the CBS screen it had Brad Pitt as the name of the teams. Okay, number 8 in your ACC power rankings.
I've got Syracuse at number 8. They've rattled off 3 straight wins and 3 of their last 4 since they lost that game to Notre Dame, and Buddy Boeheim keeps leading the way. 12 three-pointers in his last 3 games, and of course that's who Notre Dame plays Wednesday, and he hit 7 three-pointers in that game against the Irish a couple weeks ago.
It's funny, you could have Syracuse at 11, Notre Dame at 8, I wouldn't have blinked. That's how close
everybody is. And that's what it is. It's It's kind of a matter of what's going on today when you look at these.
ACC Power Rankings, team number 7.
Clemson at number 7. Everyone kind of got excited with that win over North Carolina last week, but then you sit back and look at what North Carolina is. But their starters hit just 3 of 17 three-pointers in their loss to NC State over the weekend.
Did you see Vanderbilt went 0 for 25 against Tennessee? The first time they didn't make a 3 in 1,038 games. There are only two teams left that have made a 3 in every game that they've ever played with the three-point line.
No kidding. I did not see that. Yep. That's a good nugget.
That's kind of an SEC thing, but just throwing it in there.
Yeah.
All right, team 6.
NC State, C.J. Bryce's return helped the Wolfpack in they've won 3 of their last 4 after starting out 1-2 in their conference games. That 5-point win over Notre Dame, the closest of their wins in that stretch, but Bryce missed a couple weeks, so who knows? Maybe NC State kind of gets on a little bit of a roll. He is their leading scorer at 15 points a game.
Well, they're 11-1 at home right now, 13-5 overall, 4-3 in the ACC. ACC Power Rankings, who is 5th?
See, and now, by the way, NC State is the first of 3 different teams with 4-3 records in conference play right now. Virginia Tech is another one of them. They had their 3-game win streak snapped with their loss to Syracuse. Landers Nolly, though, is the third leading scorer in the conference, just under 18 points a game. They kind of have a chance to get rolling as well with just one of their next 8 games against a team ranked ahead of them in the ACC standing. So it'll be interesting to see if the Hokies make a little move here soon.
Blackshear left Virginia Tech for Florida. The Gators were a top 10 team in the preseason. They're starting to come back. They're 12-5, 4-1 in the SEC with the old Hokie in the middle for the Gators. Okay, so to the top 4. So I guess this is the number 1 team of the everybody else group.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's Virginia, and maybe Virginia just gets the nod because they're the defending national champ, you know, that kind of thing. But they are 4-3, and like you said, it is the everyone else because the number 4 team, 4, 5, and 6 in the ACC, all have 3 losses in conference play and 5 losses overall, beginning with Virginia right here in this spot. And they snapped a 3-game losing streak that included losses to Boston College and Syracuse, and they barely beat Georgia Tech. So I don't know how good the number 4 team in the ACC really is, but for right now it's Virginia.
Okay, now to the top 3 in your ACC basketball power rankings. We're down to Duke, Florida State, and Louisville left on the board, number 3.
So I've got Duke here at number 3. They're 5-2 in conference play. They lost to Clemson and then to Louisville last week. It's the first time they've lost consecutive games in 2 years, and they committed 16 turnovers in the loss to the Cardinals. Their next real challenge, though, is going to be 6 games down the road when they host Florida State. So for right now, Duke is at number 3.
Okay, number 2.
I've got the Louisville Cardinals here. Jordan Juarez leading the ACC just under 20 points a game. He had a season-low 6 in Saturday's win over Duke, but freshman David Johnson picked up the slack. He had 19 points and 7 assists.
Okay, and your number 1 team, you know how many times this team has won in a row?
9 times.
That's right. 9 game winning streak for
Florida State, the Seminoles, and again, their only conference loss was to open the season opener when Notre Dame played North Carolina and all these conference teams were playing each other right out of the bat. Their only conference loss is to Pittsburgh. Otherwise, they are on a roll right now. They also lost to Indiana last month somehow, but they do have wins over both Louisville and Virginia, and Devin Vassell, their leading scorer, he's kind of trending toward being an NBA lottery pick right now, 41 points in his last 2 games.
I doubt probably the top 3 teams will change the next time we do this. It may rotate order, but the top 3 seem pretty locked into the ACC.
I think so.
Some combination of Florida State, Louisville, and Duke. We've got Rapid Fire coming up next, 28 minutes after the top of the hour at 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader. We're also on the
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
All right, Darren, I promised you a Patrick Mahomes question for Rapid Fire, so we'll just lead right off with it. If you could have Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, or Lamar Jackson as your quarterback for the next 10 years, which one would you pick?
Well, I think you're going to have to go with Mahomes because even though he does not have the electrical, consistent runs of Lamar Jackson, he has the ability to scramble and threaten teams. A lot of teams play man against Kansas City, which opens up running lanes for Mahomes. If you play zone, he picks you apart. So a lot of teams go man, including Tennessee, and he really hurt the Titans with his legs. How about two straight games with 53 yards rushing, once against Houston and then against Tennessee yesterday? So with his ability to throw the ball, his athleticism, pretty decent speed, probably doesn't get enough credit for that. I'm going to go with Mr. Mahomes.
I think I've got to go there too. I mean, you look at Joe Burrow, he's still a college guy. He's going to be the number one pick. But he's still a college guy. We haven't seen him do anything in the NFL yet. And it's always a big jump, no matter how good these guys look. Lamar Jackson, such a great athlete. Over 1,200 rushing yards this year, over 3,000 passing yards and 36 touchdowns. What worries me about Lamar Jackson is we've seen this before. He's basically, he looks more slender than Robert Griffin III. But just looking at their weights, they're listed both right around the same weight, 212, 213 in that range. And, I mean, Griffin has missed all of two different seasons. He's Jackson's backup right now. I just worry about the durability of a guy built like that. No matter how good he looks, that he can withhold that. Mahomes, 76 touchdowns in two seasons as a starter. The only other guy that's even close to that in the history of the NFL is Dan Marino.
Wow.
Worked out pretty well for him, you know. So a great start to the career for Patrick Mahomes in his Super Bowl in his second season. I'd have to go with Mahomes as well.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was watching. I thought you had something ready to go over there, so I was kind of holding off for a second.
I was searching for something.
Okay, all right. I saw you pushing buttons, and yes, it was like you were poised to play something.
I'll pounce at some point.
I gave my pregnant pause there for a second. So we're both in agreement. How much does Mahomes
don't steal a surprise?
How much when you look at Mahomes and the skill set, it's not exactly the same as your guy Elway, but is he about the closest comparison maybe that you could think of if you want to start comparing guys? Just the kind of things that they can do. Maybe runs a little bit better than Elway, but
I mean, Elway didn't have an ACL in one knee.
That's true, too.
That's a good question. I don't know what the comparison is to Mahomes right now. Stumped off the top of my head.
The thing about Mahomes is it kind of like Elway. It's not like he's not looking to run first, but he can run, and we saw that highlight play that he made yesterday. But I mean, he's back there in the pocket, patient in the pocket. I mean, there were times that the Titans had great coverage, but they just couldn't do it all game long.
I mean, I think Mahomes is better at the intermediate throws than Elway.
Yeah.
I don't know if there were many guys better than Elway throwing the deep ball. And they both have that same ability to keep the play alive and make something happen. So
right.
I think there are some comparisons, but I sure wish Elway was in a passing offense in his prime, because he was with Dan Reeves then, and that was a different philosophy back then. So his numbers don't stack up to some of the all-time greats because of the offense that he was in, unfortunately. Yeah. But Mahomes, man, oh man, with the weapons he has, whew, sky's the limit for a few years here.
That's true. So Andy Reid leads the Chiefs to the Super Bowl, head coach, second team that he has led to a Super Bowl. So with that in mind, do you buy or sell Andy Reid as a Hall of Famer right now?
You're going to open up Pandora's box with me here.
I was hoping to. I want to see where this goes because there's a guy that you – go ahead.
The same holds true with Canton as Cooperstown, in my opinion.
Okay.
They let too many marginal players into Cooperstown, and I think we're now getting to that point – in the NFL. I'm not saying you have to win a championship to get into a Hall of Fame. So let me make that perfectly clear.
But when you look at coaches who are in the Hall of Fame in the NFL, it's pretty reserved for guys who have won, with few exceptions, guys who have won championships.
And I was going to mention a prime example, Marv Levy.
Exactly.
When he was a coach, did you think of him as a guy in the same gold jacket room as Tom Landry and Don Shula and Bill Walsh?
And I think what gets him in is the fact they go to four straight Super Bowls.
And sympathy.
Right. I think that's part of it. That Bills team was a dominant team of that era. They just didn't quite finish it off and actually win a championship.
Did you ever think when your Cowboys faced Bill Cowher and the Steelers, he was an automatic Hall of Famer?
No.
Did you honestly think, when you factor in the short amount of time he was a head coach, that Jimmy Johnson would be a Hall of Famer?
I didn't, because of that, because of the condensed amount of time. And they both... Yep, but they've won championships. They've won championships. So I don't know where that sentiment came from for both of them, especially at the same time.
The bar for coaches just seems to be fluctuating.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson, to me, you can look at it two different ways. Cowher had longer success with one Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
Johnson had more success in a shorter time frame with Dallas, but when he went to Miami, the success wasn't there.
Yeah, and he still had Marino, granted, at the end of his career. But,
and I remember they went up against the Broncos team going for their second consecutive Super Bowl, and they played in Denver in the divisional round and absolutely got annihilated.
I wonder how much this factored into it, where Jimmy, because we've had these conversations before about Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones. Jimmy, did you hear him on the Dan Patrick Show last week by any chance?
I did not.
He was on the Dan Patrick Show, and that Herschel Walker trade always comes up. And he went through all the aspects of the Herschel Walker trade, but he also said he was on the phone calling general managers from other teams, wheeling and dealing every bit as much, if not more so, than Jerry Jones. And I think he said they made 54 trades in those first few years. So it wasn't just the Herschel Walker deal. They made 50-plus trades that helped set up that championship run, winning three Super Bowls in a span of 4 years in the early 90s. Now, obviously, he wasn't there for the last one, but the moves that he made set Barry Switzer up for that last one. So I think that his ability as not just a coach, but also as a personnel guy, really kind of set that up. And we've seen a lot of coaches, I think, since then, more involved on the personnel side than maybe we did in the 80s and 90s.
So I guess you wanted me to...
But the question was Andy Reid. That's right. We got completely sidetracked. Is Andy Reid a Hall of Famer for getting two teams to the Super Bowl, the sixth coach to ever do it?
I needed to say all that to bring it to this point that, no, right now I don't believe he's a Hall of Famer, okay. But if he wins this game... I think he's a lock. Even without it, he's seventh all-time in wins.
Right.
And since Marv Levy got in, I can't imagine they'll keep Andy Reid out for being top 10 in the NFL in victory. So I don't think it is necessary for him to make the Hall of Fame to win one. If he wins one, I think absolutely you can start printing the tickets for Andy Reid down the line going to Canton.
I would agree with that, because someone you mentioned in our last question, if Andy Reid is a Hall of Famer right now just for getting two teams to the Super Bowl, then Dan Reeves needs to be in the Hall.
No.
You're anti-Dan.
No.
He held Elway back all those years.
He was going to trade him to the Redskins. He drafted Tommy Maddox when Elway's in his prime. Stop it. Glad we whooped him in Super Bowl 33.
Yeah, I was going to say, he did get the Falcons to the Super Bowl. That was his other team after getting all those Elway
80s teams. That was the sweetest victory ever.
Super Bowls. I'm sure it was. But did you know that Dan, and I found this out looking, Andy Reid, as you said, the seventh most wins all time. Dan Reeves, 10th all time in winning percentage in NFL history. But I guess my point is, if Andy Reid, because you hear people saying, well, he's got him to, you know, his second team to the Super Bowl. He's done all these great things in the regular season. He hasn't won a championship. I would still say, and I won't pump the brakes on it, if Andy Reid is deserving based on just what he's done right now without a championship, I think Dan Reeves is deserving as well.
Just food for thought.
But you watched him more closely, so I will take your word that...
Coach A has a .552 winning percentage and 170 regular season wins and two Super Bowl titles. Jimmy Johnson has a .556 winning percentage with 80 regular season wins and two titles.
Okay.
So are you surprised the guy with 170 regular season wins and only four percentage points behind Jimmy Johnson is not even sniffing the Hall of Fame right now?
Well, here's the other thing I would say in Jimmy's
favor. Well, do you want to know who it is first?
I would just say that those first 3 years, they did a lot of losing before they got to the winning. You know, so some of that was inherited losses, I think you would say, that they were doing. I'm trying to think of who that could – did you say one Super Bowl title?
Well, two as a head coach and one as a coordinator.
Okay.
So that doesn't even really count.
And he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Correct. He's not even mentioned.
Really? Who is it?
Mike Shanahan.
No kidding.
And at the start of the Cowboys' run, there was no free agency, so they could stack up that talent.
Right.
This is a story for another day. The Steelers dynasty looks a whole lot different if there's free agency in the 70s.
Oh, absolutely. All those dynasties, you know, not dynasties, but there were a lot of the Cowboys stayed together. The Dolphins stayed together. The Vikings, for that matter, with Bud Grant, who never won a Super Bowl, they stayed together in the 70s.
Patriots are a marvel.
Yep.
Okay.
I think it was, what was it, like 94, 95 when free agency started?
Before the 94 season.
Yeah. So that was right toward the end of Dallas's run, and
so
Jimmy was already gone.
Jimmy didn't have to worry about free agency
after 94, yeah,
in his 5 years in Dallas.
Right.
It happened right after. And with Miami, went 9-7, 10-6, and 9-7.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right.
Is that it for today?
I've got one more if you want. But if you want to take a break, we could do it as well. Whatever
okay.
you want. Or we could just come back and talk more football, whatever you want to do.
Why don't we save that one for tomorrow?
Okay, let's do that.
Does it have life?
Yeah,
on the
shelf? Definitely, definitely.
All right, we'll do that tomorrow. We'll come back and talk a little more NFL, 6:43 at WSBT and on the SportsBeat app.
Arms extended, shotgun snap, getting the block, stops, bounces up and down, rolls out of the pocket, throws off balance, down the middle line, pass over the shoulder, catch, 15, Watkins, 10, chase to the 5, into the end zone, touchdown! That may be all she wrote! 60-yard touchdown pass!
Power, second down and 10. They give us to Raheem Mostert. Mostert sweeping the left side, cuts back in the 10. Mostert at the 5, and he's into the end zone for the fourth time tonight. This time from 22 yards out. And Raheem Mostert extends the Niner lead to 33-7.
Those calls from Westwood One, heard on 96.1 WSBT yesterday. The great Kevin Harlan, Kevin Kugler on the calls. As Kansas City wins the AFC, taking down the old Tennessee Titans 35-24. In the nightcap, it was all San Francisco, a 27-0 lead at halftime, and the 49ers beat Green Bay 37-20. So we've got one heck of a Super Bowl matchup. I hope this game lives up to the possibilities. Again, Las Vegas, this number's probably going to be pretty close to pick 'em over the next 13 days. I think you mentioned a point and a half for Kansas City at last check. I have a feeling it may get closer to a pick'em before we get to Super Bowl 54. Two explosive offenses, but they do it from
completely different ways.
Absolutely. Kansas City, high octane. Now, they ran the heck out of the ball in the second half, showing a different side of them, but they are all about Mahomes throwing the football all over the place. San Francisco is more of that West Coast style that Kyle Shanahan watched his dad win Super Bowls with Denver. In fact, you're probably going to see a lot of this. I think Fox showed it, that Kyle was holding the cord for his dad Mike's headphones during Super Bowl 32 and 33.
I haven't seen that picture yet.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's all in the NFL film
videos. Was he like 12 or something? Or
He might have been a hair older, I guess.
Man.
I'm not sure, but he was a young pup then, getting to experience the Super Bowl. And then, of course, the offensive coordinator for Atlanta, when they blew that lead against New England, that famous sequence where he didn't run the ball late.
Yep.
And they threw it, stopped the clock, opening the door for New England to complete that comeback. So this is kind of a cool matchup. Second and third leading offensive teams in terms of points in the NFL. San Francisco's known for having the great defense. I'll give Kansas City credit. They overhauled their defense during the offseason. They changed coordinators. They changed personnel. In the last 7-8 weeks, they've actually become, I would say, a little better than middle of the pack, which, honestly, Sean, that's all you need with the way this Kansas City offense can score. They don't have to be top five. If they are just, hold a team to 20, 24 points, that should be good enough to win a ton of football games with this offense.
The fact that they held Tennessee and Derrick Henry to 17 points over the first three quarters, I was pretty impressed by that. And really, it could have been even worse if not for there were like, well, I think, two pass interference calls that really bailed out Tennessee. I think at least one of them was in the first half. They would have punted, but instead they end up driving, and I think they scored their last touchdown after the pass interference call on third and long. It really bailed them out. So I was pretty impressed with what they were able to do. Looked like maybe Henry and Tennessee, the fact that they didn't have that first-round bye, they're playing their third game, maybe they looked a little bit gassed by that point. They had reached their maximum, but credit all, obviously, the Kansas City offense, 35 points once again without hardly breaking a sweat.
It was interesting on Twitter today, someone that I admire their writings from years past that's covered Purdue and was talking about the Bears. Wake up, you get all this money to figure out personnel and you can't figure out Mahomes and Watson. and mention Mostert's name, who was at Purdue. And the Bears had him for a short time in 2016 on the practice squad. He got a few carries, been cut seven times, and he mentioned yesterday in the postgame he uses that as motivation. So I'm like, well, wonder who was he at Purdue? And they listed him as a wide receiver the first 3 years and then had 93 carries his senior year. So before we criticize the Bears for not figuring out, how about Purdue not figuring out?
Yeah.
You think he would have 500 carries if he was all that?
Wasn't much
his
of a track
year.
Record there, yeah, to show that there was anything.
136 carries in 4 years at Purdue. And again, he was listed as a wide receiver for a couple of those years.
But Kyle Shanahan, as you mentioned, I mean, he's put together some pretty high octane offenses of his own going back to when he was in Atlanta. And look at it. The Falcons haven't been the same since Shanahan has left. Now, free agency plays into that as well, but they haven't. They look like they were a team that was destined to be in a couple of Super Bowls after, you know, when they the year that they blew the 28-3 lead against the Patriots. But they haven't been the same. Shanahan has been pretty innovative with what he's done both in Atlanta and San Francisco in a short amount of time.
Biggest mistake of John Elway's front office career was not bringing Shanahan back to Denver to be the head coach. Yeah. Don't understand that. Not sure if he was just wanting to separate himself from the Shanahans, although there's a great relationship there, or he just wanted to be the power guy. I don't know. But it was a very strange moment when he went to San Francisco and not Denver. I scratched my head on that one. So we go into Super Bowl 54 with a great matchup, Chiefs and 49ers. The Chiefs in it for the first time in 50 years. San Francisco going for their sixth Super Bowl title, which would match Pittsburgh for the all-time record. So 13 days away, gut feeling. Is this going to be a tight game, and do you have a gut feeling on a winner at this point?
My gut feeling is that 49ers defense is going to at least slow Kansas City down to some extent. I'm looking a touchdown either way right now.
They can rush four and drop seven and have great success. Not many teams in the NFL, if any, can do it any better than the San Francisco 49ers. Richard Sherman back there, he's seen a lot of interesting things in the Super Bowl through the years. He'll be back there trying to contain that Chiefs passing attack. Yep. I'm really intrigued by that.
And you've pretty much got a zero experience factor. I mean, Garoppolo's been a backup quarterback for the Patriots on a couple of championship teams, but his first time being the man, Mahomes the first time, and most of these guys, as young as both of these teams are, both of them, it's going to be the first Super Bowl experience for just about all of these guys.
Careful, Kansas City. I would not suggest falling behind by double digits again like you did against the Texans and the Titans. Don't mess around with this 49ers defense.
Yep.
That could get a little hairy.
Better defense.
I'm leaning San Francisco right now, but I think it's going to be one heck of a Super Bowl. It is 5 minutes in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 WSBT, and we're live on the SportsBeat app. SportsBeat tonight, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Michiana Boat and Sports Show at the Century Center in South Bend, January 24th, 25th, and 26th. And by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org.